Hi. What I'm going to talk about is work that I did for my master's thesis. Did an analysis of the distribution of the seed head feeders that Mike just talked about. And what the question that this work ended up kind of being focused on is what variables control the distribution of the hairy weevil and Caetorelia succinia. What I'm going to go through today is talking about a description of a survey that Mike Pitcairn was involved with CDFA, and then how I created a multivariate data set to sort of analyze the distribution of those two species, and then look at the results of the regression tree and multiple regression analysis, and then discuss really briefly the common important variables found in both analyses. So in 2001 and 2002, there was a study that both Joe and Mike mentioned where there were transects driven throughout the range of yellow star thistle in California, approximately every 10 miles along these road transects. Sampling was done where at least 100 seed heads from across 10 different plants were collected. The coordinates for all of these sites were GPSed, and there were 421 sites that were sampled between the 2 years. When they got the samples back to the lab, 100 seed heads were dissected for the four species that were in the survey for the damage that they caused, and then the attack rates were calculated based on that damage. So briefly, the results for Urophora serunaceva, it was recovered at 62% of the locations, and the mean attack rate was 4%, which is low, relatively. But you can see it's clustered here, mostly along the coast. Same with Bangosternis, again recovered at 62% of the location. The mean attack rate is also low, although the range goes from 0 to 83%, so it's locally actually can be quite high. And in the areas where it's high is, as you can see up here, mostly clustered around mountainous areas. The two species that I'm going to focus on were recovered at more locations, 99% of the locations in the case of Caetorelia succinia, and 80% of the locations for Eustenopus. The attack rate for Eustenopus, the mean was 25%, and the range was from up to 93%. For Caetorelia succinia, the range was, the mean attack rate was higher, generally 53%. So to look at what variables might be involved in that clumped distribution that we were seeing for those species, what I did was use GIS to create a multivariate data set. The variables that were included were a lot of climate variables that were pulled from raster data sets created by Climate Source. Climate Source uses a PRISM method, which is it's actually a regression based on topography and is supposed to yield more accurate interpolations of weather station data than, say, just standard IDW or Krieging. And then there were also a number of other variables that were included. Like, for example, this here was a township-level survey that was performed in 1997 in the state, showing kind of ratings for where yellow star thistle was present, and then also within that, where that infestation was heavy through the township or light. And that variable was also joined with the survey results. Also included the distance from a release site as a variable to see if dispersal might be limiting. Some suggest here, if you look at the attack rates for Caetorelia, which was only actually released in 21 sites, you can see that the distances from the release site vary quite a bit, but there doesn't seem to be a very strong relationship. But there is a suggestion that there might be a relationship with Eustenopus here. There's this kind of boundary effect somewhere around 20, 21, 22 kilometers. This one's a little hard to read, but if the dark blue and black dots are areas of either low or no attack rates for Eustanopus in this left slide here. And this is actually the northern central valley of California. So we're looking at areas essentially north of Sacramento, but in the central valley. And when I looked at the map, basically, of these lower attack rates, I said, heck, that looks like rice. And so I thought it might be worthwhile to include some sort of land cover analysis, and I used the National Land Cover data set from the USGS and joined it with the survey points and then essentially assigning each of the 421 points a cover class based on that data set, so agriculture, barren, developed, forest. The variables that were used, I actually had to take a lot of the climate variables and do a correlation and then a variance inflation, and I used the variance inflation factor to get rid of some of the variables. But what ended up being included in the analysis were these variables here. So we have the distance from the release site. For Keterellia, we include the attack rates for Eustanopus because there seemed to be some sort of relationship there. I'm just going to actually zoom back here. That's one of the things I wanted to point out, is if you look at this IDW, here's Keterellia's where it's low, and it actually corresponds fairly nicely with where Eustanopus is high. And then also looked at precipitation and dew point during the periods of the year where the insects were active, thinking that water relations might have something to do with their distribution. Looked at maximum and minimum temperatures, and then the township ratings and the land cover. The first analysis I'm going to talk about is regression trees. A regression tree basically, what it does is it starts by asking a set of binary questions, and what it's trying to do is split at each level of the tree the whole data set into areas that are more similar. So it's looking for homogeneity in the response set. So it takes every value, every explanatory value in the whole data set. So all of the precipitation values, all of the land cover values, all of those values, and tests to see if I make a division here and I divide the data set by this value, am I getting more homogeneity in the response variable? And it grows out a maximum tree because once it's done it once, it will do it again on the two subsets that it generates. And then once it grows a maximum tree, there's a complexity cost measure that is used to essentially prune that maximum tree all the way back up to the first decision node. And then to determine which tree is the best size, cross-validation is used. In our case, because we only had 421 sites, we used internal cross-validation where the data set was essentially divided into 10, and then each of those subsets were tested against that. The advantages of using regression tree is it's not parametric, so it doesn't make assumptions about the distribution of the points with respect to the explanatory variables. It can model non-homogeneous response. That is to say, let's say in Northern California, the Keterellia might have a positive relationship with maximum temperatures, but in Southern California, it has a negative one. Well, you couldn't get that with standard regression, but you can with a regression tree. And also, it can handle nominal and continuous data. So unlike standard regression, where you're limited to things that are actually numeric, we could use cover classes and yellow star thistle classes because it can handle nominal data as well. And in our case, it was very easy to map because we had used GIS to generate the multivariate data set, creating a map of the models was relatively easy. You just select out areas based on the same criteria that the regression tree produces. The disadvantages is that it doesn't handle linear regressions very well, and variables with high importance can be excluded from the tree, and that's because it's a binary splitting. So a variable that was that was close but not the best variable on the first cut might be excluded from all of the subsequent cuts. Doesn't mean it's not an important variable. It just means that because of the particulars of the way this works, it was excluded from an analysis, from the results. So let's take a look at the results for Eustanopus. Eustinopus, the first division actually happened on precipitation. So areas of lower summer precipitation also had lower attack, generally speaking, lower attack rates. And that division actually happened twice. So if you look at nodes 1 and 2, node 1 is an area that has very low summer rain. It's these areas here, and it's associated with almost no Eustinopus. For slightly higher levels of summer rain, we get a lot more attack rates. The median attack rate for that group is 13%. The divisions over here on the areas with higher spring to summer rain is the distance from the release site. So this area in dark blue that you see is areas that are outside of the 21 kilometer range for where a release for Eustinopus happened. And some of that includes the range of yellow star thistle, but it's also very close to that boundary line that we saw in that other graph. But some of the area, say like right here in the desert, is outside of the range of yellow star thistle. The next division is on elevation, and it's this little area right in here. Oops. Right here in the Northern Valley. So areas with lower elevations also tended to have lower attack rates. So the median on this one is 5%, whereas the median at that decision node is 34%. So the division after that is on May to August relative humidity. And this is kind of interesting because it isolates areas that are well within the dispersal range of the insect with good conditions in terms of rain, but at these higher levels of humidity, which is these brown areas along the coast here in the north coast, there's actually reductions in the median of Eustinopus attack rates. And then the final division is again on the distance from a release site. So these are the areas that regression tree found to be the most to have the highest attack rates. And these are all both areas where we're close to Eustinopus, and the areas that had the highest overall were the areas that were the closest to the release site. The model for Keterillia was much simpler. There were two variables that were identified as being important through regression tree analysis. One was the attack rates of Eustinopus. So areas with higher attack rates of Eustinopus had lower attack rates for Keterillia. And then the second variable is May to August precipitation. And in this case, it's the inverse relationship. So areas with higher precipitation actually had lower attack rates. I'm going to kind of boom through the multiple regression analysis, it kind of in the name interests of time, but I wanted to say that when we did the multiple regression analysis, we didn't do it on the whole data set. I was working with Richard Plant at UC Davis on this, and when I was going through the process of variable elimination, I created these correlation graphs. And Richard looked at this and he said, well, that's very interesting. There are these sort of odd patterns where it's not like there seems to be multiple trends in the way the relationships between these climate variables are happening. What happens if you just grab the ones, say, down here and grab the ones over here and then make a map of those and see what happens? And so that's what I did. I isolated out the ones that seemed to be different on the graphs and ended up with contiguous areas in the state. So this is sort of a rough statistical way of getting areas that had similar trends climatologically. And I just called these things the coastal, mountain, and inland valley regions. But they were identified basically using the correlations from the climate variables. The long and the short of this is, here, this is for Eustinopus, and the variables that were the most important in the regression tree across the board, again, were distance from a release site, elevation, and precipitation One variable that was in multiple linear regression, but not in not in the regression tree, was maximum temperatures. Moving along to Keterelia, again, the attack rates for Eustanopus are identified as being important important variables with a negative relationship, and also the precipitation values in the mountain area and the inland area. One variable that is different is in the mountain area, there is also a negative relationship with distance from a release site and a negative relationship with elevation. To discuss what those results might mean, generally speaking, well, first look at Keterelia succinia. It looks like Eustanopus has a negative impact on Keterelia's prevalence. And there might be a couple of mechanisms for that. One is that if Eustanopus is in an area, it can feed on the adults actually feed on the seed heads. And so if it succeeds in delaying the development of the buds, Keterelia might actually disperse away from that site because the site is not the site doesn't have a good phenology linking with when it needs to be laying eggs. Another mechanism might be that Eustanopus preys on the larvae directly. The thing that's interesting is if you look at Eustanopus, distance from release is one of the seems to be one of the controlling factors, which says that at the time of the survey, they haven't reached their maximum range. And so one interesting question would be, what do we expect to see in the future in terms of the relationship of these two insects as Eustanopus expands its range, and how is that going to impact the success of both of these species and their total impact on yellow star thistle. With Eustanopus, the other controlling factors that in both analyses were elevation and coastal humidity. Elevation, you can actually look behind the door and see what other variables would have given a similar split in the regression tree analysis. And it's one of those things, elevation turns out, I perhaps shouldn't have included it, but I did because it looked like a good variable. The one that is the closest to it is actually land use, and if I was going to go back and do it again, I would not put elevation in there, and I would stick with variables that you know what it is mechanistically that they might be doing, because in this case, elevation could be related to land use if you look at that region, but it could also relate to rainfall, and so you're sort of left with what did we learn from that? And coastal humidity was the other variable, and that could just be maybe there's some disease of the insect. Who knows why that might be a controlling factor. The last thing I'm going to mention is why do these insects seem to have a negative relationship with the opposing relationships with precipitation? I did do a partial regression to see if that was actually independent, the relationship with precipitation does seem to be independent of the negative relationship of the insects with each other. And it could be that Eustanopus has water requirements that make it thrive more in areas that do have later rain. And it could also be, the negative for Keterelia, it may be if in areas where there's later rain, again, you have later bolting of yellow star thistle, and that might have some impact on the prevalence. But then there's also characteristics of the plants that weren't measured during the survey that may also stem from rainfall, because you can see that yellow star thistle is very related to the distribution of rain, which is what you see here.
Is it published or will it be published?
I'm still working on it. I submitted it once, and now I'm submitting it to a second journal.